You're listening to Around Comics, episode 102.
Topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman. I am joined, as always, by the co-host of the show, Mr. Brian Salazar.
I'm feeling very refreshed, recharged, ready to roll.
Everyone's
after my week
relaxed.
Off.
It is.
I'm very...
I'm ready to learn.
Yeah.
It's a learning day.
Absolutely.
It's education is number one
Which
for
is our
comics.
Our other co-host, Professor Tom Caters.
I'm glad
Doctor?
I have a girlfriend, because if any woman ever heard the rest of this episode, there'd be zero chance I would ever have sex again.
You better get ready to pop the question soon after this episode,
God,
Tom.
Why do you know so much about old
comics? I didn't know you were such a nerd. I'm leaving
exactly.
You now.
And sitting in, now a regular fixture.
Our JSA expert.
current artist of the new X-Men. And the search for Darkchild. What is it?
He doesn't know.
That's for magic. It's a quest for magic. We went over this last week.
Mr. Scotty Young, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I have no friends.
We're kind of like a glass of water, like a plane where all the water runs down to the lowest level, where like people with no friends just kind of all gather.
Oh,
gathering.
Oh, I've worked all week and don't have anything to do. Who else is doing nothing on a
Friday
night? Or does it have the capabilities of doing anything? Because I think,
hey,
what friends could I call? I don't really have any.
I know three guys that where I can find on Friday night.
Three losers that hang out in the comic shop on a Friday night.
Well, this is one of our Comics 101 episodes. It's turned into a staple of the show. It's one these are the episodes I really have started to look forward to.
Edutainment.
And today we're going to pass things over and put Tom center stage for Comics 101
I'm
JSA.
Tom's very
dun,
nervous.
Dun, dun.
I've never actually read any JSA. I've been lying.
What's the JSA stand for?
Well, we're all looking forward to learning about the JSA. And this is also a perfect time to mention that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Follow the adventures of the JSA with InStockTrades.com, from the early Golden Age appearances in the All-Star Comics DC archives to the latest trade paperback collections of today's JSA, InStockTrades.com has what you're looking for. Remember that InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices, and all orders over $50 ship free.
And they've got a ton of JSA stuff.
You looking for something, Tom?
I lost my show notes.
Oh. That's not good.
Yeah. All right,
show over. End of
episode. I'm lost. I don't know. Am I supposed to read something?
No.
I mean, I have
Tom,
my notes.
Tom, relax. Just, we'll take care of it from here.
I've never seen
and
you
I'll
this.
Cue you whenever
no,
we're
I,
so
I,
calm.
I have my notes. I usually have my notes.
Tom usually comes in.
Someone bring me my notes!
Tom's nervous when I'm
Tom
around.
Usually comes in all willy-nilly. It's all right.
My gigantic eraser-hard nipples often make people nervous.
Talk about Golden Age comics.
Well, folks, you should all know by now that Around Comics was recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. I see Hank and a friend of his just came in.
And Hank's friend.
There's met a guy, Jeff, I believe, came from one of the northern suburbs to drop in and say howdy a little earlier. So
really?
You never know who's going to drop in here.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him.
Remember that your Around Comics experience isn't complete until you've read this week's Long Box of Love. Each Thursday episode of Around Comics has a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic from Brian Bowles. Check it out every Thursday at aroundcomics.com.
Absolutely. And we also have a new contest. If you heard last week, it is our Be a Hero. The contest rules are simple. Make a donation at heroinitiative.org, then send us an email at hero@aroundcomics.com letting us know that you did so. Everyone that makes a donation is entered into a drawing that will take place at the end of June. The contest is being sponsored by InStockTrades.com, and they're including two $50 gift certificates, good for anything at InStockTrades.com. In addition to a $50 gift certificate for the winner, you'll also receive a prize pack containing Jeffrey Brown's I'm Going to Be Small. Jeffrey is not only signed, but has done a fantastic two-page illustration on the inside cover of the book. Other prizes include a Scotty Young hardcover sketchbook with a...
a lock of Scotty Young's hair attached to it.
And an old shoelace.
Pubic hair. It's
second fresh prize shaved. Is a $50 gift certificate to InStockTrades.com. And I'm sure that there's going to be other stuff that will be added there. I think Norton's going to throw something in. We'll have to put Seeley into a hammerlock. And a
personal phone call from John Suntress.
Yeah, there you go.
one of his many...
Hello, Harry Potter.
Yeah, his cavalcade of characters.
Hello. Hi.
It'll be like, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or where you can get a personalized phone greeting from...
You can hear, you'll get a John Suntress conversation between Father Pat and Harry Carey about how awesome you are.
And had a very valid question from Matt Kramer this week. He wanted to know if you made multiple donations, could you get multiple entries? And so we talked about it. If you make a $1 to $10 donation,
did he talk to you about this?
I talked to you about it.
I'm just kidding.
Dorfus. If you make a $1 to $10 donation and email us, that's good for one entry. If you make a donation in multiples of 10, let us know, and you will get one entry per $10 donated. So if you donate $100, you get 10 entries.
Whoa.
And we'll put those in, and it'll be random.
Whoa.
So please donate today. Do something good.
Be a hero, not a zero. I just made that up.
That was quick.
Huh? I'm going to try to win my own book so I don't have to give one away free.
Yeah, Scotty,
I don't like this donating shit.
Guests of the show, not enter the contest. Oh, but you can still donate.
All right, guys. Well, as we mentioned at the beginning, this is one of our Comics 101 episodes. Tom is going to be taking center stage to walk us through the history that is the JSA. So sit back, grab the beverage of your choice, and enjoy Comics 101 JSA.
All right, I'm going to start, but I have two things to say before I start. Number one,
I love you.
Yeah, it's number one, I love all of you. And this,
and I'm not strung out.
Derail me. Yeah, I'm not strung out on the JSA. Number one, a lot of these characters are 60 or 70 years old, and it's virtually impossible to tell you everything about each character. So what I tried to do is I tried to pick out the stuff that you actually need to know to, you know, if you were to pick up a book with one of these characters today, that you could get by with it. I'm not going to try and explain
it would be
Hawkman's
a
10
part
episode. Yeah, Hawkman's history is confusing because they fucked it up. So, I mean, I'm not going to be able to explain every single facet of every character's history. And I'd like to give credit to where credit's due for a lot of the information I got.
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, my own memory.
Well, thank you, memory.
I had a lot of the later books. I read, like
three long boxes of quarter
three
books.
Three long boxes of old books. The All-Star Companions by Roy Thomas were really helpful. If I couldn't remember who did something or if I needed to find out who wrote what, those books are amazing. They have a level of detail which is even more frightening
than your memory.
Yeah, yeah. Roy Thomas is worse than I am. But so I just wanted to say that ahead of time. And of course, if I say anything that's wrong, and you want to argue with me about it, you can email me.
Or come to our forum.
Right. Yeah, come to our forum and tell me I'm wrong.
Tom, you're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
You didn't know that Hawkman
773.
Yeah, you can call Tom Caters. You can call Tom Caters and yell at him. So we shall begin at the beginning.
Right.
Which is the formation of the All-Star Comics line, which were where the JSA stories were printed. It was a product of a team-up between Max Gaines, which is a name we've heard before.
EC Comics. Mm-hmm.
And the already existing Detective Comics, where Detective Comics gave a lot of the funding to Max Gaines, and they sort of created a weird hybrid mm-hmm. All-American
Comics.
That's
Bill Gaines' father, right?
Max Gaines is Bill Gaines' father. Yeah.
The company was separate from DC, yet it used the DC label on its publishing, and it got to use DC characters in All-Star Comics. So it was kind of a weird business situation. In addition to All-Star Comics, the same company would also publish Flash Comics and the Green Lantern series. The genesis sort of where the idea for coming up with this sort of team-up of all these superheroes came from the World's Fair comics, which came out like 1939, 1940, which sort of shored the success that you could have by teaming up characters, because those books featured Batman and Superman on a cover together. It had a Sandman story in it, and it showed something that we're still suffering from today, which is you can get more people to buy a book if you have a crossover. So, I mean...
Did it have Wolverine in it?
Yeah, it also had Wolverine. Time-traveling Wolverine. Yeah, as John Center sells up Outsiders. John, you have the you have the World's Fair comics to blame for...
Yes.
From 19... Those sort of crossovers.
1939, I hold you in contempt.
So, from the success of that, they decided to gather some of their lesser-known characters that didn't have their own series, that had stories in various anthologies, and put them together into one team, sort of to bolster the...
The overall sales,
and just get it out in the public so people could see these characters, which also developed sort of the reason why Superman and Batman were honorary members of the JSA, but were never permanent members, because they already had their own books, and there was a lot of worrying about overexposing characters, which would also lead to any time a character got popular enough to have his own book, he would no longer be in the JSA. He would leave.
Hey, I don't need you losers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm out of here.
There's the one where the Flash leaves, and like the Flash has his own book, and they literally hold up the Flash's book. And then he's gone, and then he gets replaced with John.
Jay Garrick Flash?
Jay Garrick Flash.
Okay.
Which that's like when Angel left Buffy, and he got his own show.
Exactly. The basic beginning of how all these characters got put together. Now I'm going to go over a little bit about each one of the characters which are considered the Golden Age JSA characters.
Founding members.
Before you go into that, I just had a question. This is 1942?
This is like 1942, okay. 1940, early 40s.
And going back to, you were saying it was DC and Max Gaines Company, which...
It created All-American Comics, which published All-Star Comics, which was a weird business situation because Detective owned some of the characters and All-American owned some of them. And All-Star Comics got to put the DC label on it, which would cause problems later on. Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
They would get into a fight, and some characters would leave the JSA for no reason. Because there was,
it's like a soap opera.
Yeah, so it's a really weird business situation, how that book...
Kind of be like taking Hellboy and Invincible and someone from Dynamite and put them on a team.
Because, All-American was almost entirely funded from money from Detective Comics, mm-hmm. which made it even odder that it was a separate company. But the characters that were originally put together to be the Justice Society of America included the Atom, who is the youngest member of the JSA. He was a college student who underwent vigorous weight training and boxing classes from a former champ.
That's all you need.
Yeah, to become a crime fighter. He was barely 5 foot tall.
Wow.
He had no superpowers at the beginning besides...
A hero to short people everywhere.
Exactly. It was Al Pratt. Yeah, it's John's like, thank you.
Keep him on line, John.
Exactly. He was a member of the JSA in every single issue of All-Star Comics. All-Star Comics ran from issue 1 to issue 57, where it then was changed into All-Star Westerns. John, I have it all.
Sorry.
John's like, do you want to do the show, John?
God.
Tom just threw an elbow.
Yeah, I just threw an elbow
on Suntress' head.
Suntress was like a proud papa watching his son in a play, and it's like
from the wings,
the soccer dad.
And the first two issues of All Star Comics were just strictly anthologies of different stories with the characters, and it wasn't until the third issue that they actually made a team called the Justice Society of America, and certain characters would show up only for a couple of issues, and certain characters like the Atom would actually be in every single issue.
So what were they called before that? Were they called anything?
They were never together in a story.
Oh, okay, so they were just... It was just an anthology of different characters in and out. Okay.
Yeah, and that was... It wasn't until the third issue they started to put all those characters together into one team. And certain characters would show up very little, and certain characters would be all the time. The Atom's one of the characters that was in every single issue on some level. An honorary member was Batman, who rarely appeared in the JSA adventures. He was an honorary member the entire time it was mentioned often, but only showed up in two issues, one which was just a cameo. Another character would be Black Canary, which was Dinah Drake, who is still It's a very confusing history. She was, once again, just a normal person who was a judo-trained fighter and a florist on the side. And married to a private investigator. Yeah, and she actually didn't turn up in the JSA towards the end, till the end of its run, issue 42 out of 57. So she was sort of an addition at the end of the series.
I like how those the creators really drew from reality.
Yeah, judo-trained florist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, you know, it was a different time.
It was, yeah.
It was easier than
they were the greatest generation. Yeah,
you're right. As Tom said last week, it was a pre-9/11 world.
It was a pre-9/11 world where you could be a florist and a judo-trained fighter.
Married to a private investigator, and that, you just roll that up into a ball, and high heels and fishnet stockings, and you got a superhero.
For those who might be confused, there is a Black Canary that's currently exists in the DC Universe. That is the daughter of the original Black Canary, who is in the JSA. At some point in the history of the JSA, Black Canary, and I'll get to this later, leaves Earth 2, goes to Earth 1. It's very confusing, ends up being her daughter. All you need to know is the current one is the daughter of the original ones. They're not the same character, though it can be slightly confusing. Another member was Dr. Fate. He was a son of an archaeologist who his father finds this tomb of Naboo, this ancient god, and to punish the archaeologist friend the tomb, he kills him, but then decides to take care of his son.
And, and certain honor him, among sorcerers.
Yeah,
gods.
As Egyptian gods will do, they say, sorry, I had to punish him, but I also now have to raise you.
I'll punish myself.
Yeah,
by having to raise you.
He was taught mystical powers, and he gained eventually...
and judo.
Naboo, yeah, judo. They all, everyone has judo.
And how to plant daisies.
Yeah, and how to plant every single character. Eventually, Naboo dies, and his powers get transferred into a helmet and a cape, which Kent Nelson, who is Dr. Fate, wears around. An interesting thing with that character, though, is very early after his creation... It was determined that he was too powerful. Like, Dr. Fate's powers included just about whatever was needed to do the story.
To finish the story,
He was also sort of an oddity in a character that he had a full face, like, mask over his entire face, which was kind of uncommon for characters at that time. So to kind of fix both of those things, he cut off half the helmet so his lower face showed.
That's why.
And he had, like, half the power, which supposedly made it easier to make stories with him.
But he could breathe easier.
Yeah, and that was another weird thing, is his only weakness was, like, to attack him by his lungs. Like, gases and stuff.
And he couldn't move his neck from side to side. He had Batman neck,
very
right?
Bad. Yeah,
he had to turn his
bad.
Whole shoulders from side to side.
Couldn't pivot.
This character actually lives for quite a while, and he eventually dies due to his magic beginning to fail after Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that character's died. There's been other Dr. Fates since that one, but we'll get to that later.
There's a lot of that in JSA because, it's all this. This group, more than any other superhero group, is all about legacy. It's all about legacy and mantles, which I'm sure we'll get a lot into. Yeah.
Another character is Dr. Midnight, Charles McNider, who was injured in a mob hit while he performed surgery on a witness. He was injured and had to have these bandages over his eyes, and when very similar to Batman imagery, an owl flies through his window and inspires him that he hears it and he rips off the bandages and he finds he can see in perfect darkness, yet cannot see during the day.
Oh.
He has to develop special goggles to allow him to see during the day.
Was this just from the owl flying in? Was there no nuclear or magic?
You can retcon it however you want. That's a story for you to do eventually.
Imagination.
Dr. Midnight.
Thanks, educator.
He had a pet owl named Hootie.
Hootie. Oh, my God.
His big tactic, since he could see in perfect darkness, was this thing called blackout bombs, where he would just throw them at guys, and they couldn't see, and he could, so he would just punch them. So, I mean, he really got to the heart of the matter of solving problems.
Cut through all the bullshit.
Yeah, cut through the bullshit. I can see in the dark, you can't. The other member was The Flash, the original Flash, Jay Garrick, who got his powers by breathing hard water vapors.
Heavy water.
Well, it was hard originally, and they've changed it back and forth.
Heavy.
fizz hard and doesn't make any fucking sense.
It doesn't exactly
well,
exist.
Well, he needed, obviously needed a water softener.
Mm-hmm. Water made him run fast? The flat?
Yeah,
water made him run fast.
His ability to run incredibly fast and
wow.
runs at incredible speed.
Chicago water's pretty fucked up. We probably have powers. We don't even know
we're
it.
We're probably all
I'm probably shooting you with, like, ray beams out of my pupils right now.
He, again, was a...
Don't talk bad about Lake Michigan water that way.
Oh, I should have said, so Dr. Midnight's another character who was...
It might get offended.
I have a third arm.
Sorry, Tom.
Dr. Midnight was a member who showed up in almost all of the issues as well. As well as the Flash was a member for all of the issues, though he was honorary for a while when he went on to go do his own book. And he would come back to the book when All-American Comics and DC Detective Comics got into a fight. He had to rearrange characters, so he had to come back to the book.
Are these some of these characters, like Dr. Minute, is he still around today?
No, he's dead.
Not Mick Ryder.
Let us know what he looks like.
He has an owl. If you see a guy with an owl, it's probably him. He's got, like, a green cape.
It's actually one of my favorite all-time... One of my favorite all-time costumes.
Yellow and black costume.
Most of them have capes.
Or no, red and black. I'm thinking...
Does he fly?
No. I'll tell you if they can fly.
I'll tell you all the power.
No, I'll tell you all about him.
He doesn't exist, but there is a Dr. Midnight that's still around.
Yeah, okay. A lot of these characters. The Flash is still around.
I just thought if they're not still around, people might not know what they look like. So
that's true.
Might be something to throw
Almost
out there.
Almost all of them are someone who's got the name now. There isn't a single one that doesn't have
a new name.
Yeah, there's not a new Adam or a new Dr. Fate or a new... they don't let those properties
I'm
die,
new Scotty Young. You should not just call me Scotty. Call me New Scotty.
New Scotty. Yeah. It's New Scotty, too, in the who's who. The Flash was also one of a... It was very memorable because he probably had the best group of villains of all the characters that would often be drawn into the JSA. He would have he had a villain called the Fiddler, who was a guy who played the fiddle. But it obviously could do things.
Magic fiddle?
It wasn't a magic fiddle. He's just good at it. The Shade.
Wait, he was just so good at
Wait,
it that
is
it would
the
do...
The Shade or Shade? The one that is in the DCU now? The guy with the top
it's the
hat?
The same guy.
Okay.
He's been the same guy. It's
the devil went down to Georgia.
Ragdoll, the Thinker, the Thorn, and the Turtle, which just was a big fat guy.
Now, we all know that Flash is famous for his Rogues Gallery. Were they the Rogues Gallery? Were they called that?
They weren't called that until Barry Allen. But the Flash did have a lot of really good villains that they used quite often back in the day. Another member, probably one of the ones that's still around, is the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, who was a member for the entire run. He was honorary for a while, just like The Flash, was brought back into the book when DC and All-American got into a fight.
But he was not a Green Lantern core member.
No, he was not.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead, aren't I?
Yeah, exactly. You're like reading my sentence. He was an engineer who found a... lantern
train
that was carved, found a lantern carved out of a meteorite in China. The lantern told him to fashion a ring out of the rock, and that's how he became the Green Lantern. He had a lantern, he had his own oath that he said, he had all those things. He did have a weakness of wood. If you threw a piece of wood at him, he couldn't stop
couldn't
it.
A pencil.
Yeah.
And, he threw a pencil at him.
He threw a pencil at him, he couldn't stop it. He also had some very memorable villains. Solomon Grundy is one of his...
That's right. Grundy is one of the oldest villains in the DCU.
And since he's a swamp creature, he's partially made out of wood, which gave Alan Scott many problems.
Now, his character has been changed over the years, too, Alan Scott.
He's
his
been
powers.
Aged and de-aged and all kinds of fucked up shit, but we'll get to the thing.
I still don't know whose eyes he has.
It does not matter. He only has one eye.
And it's not his.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
It's his mother's.
Another character who's still around is Hawkman, who is Carter Hall. He probably has one of the most confusing histories of any character, because every time they reset the DC universe...
That's a Comics 101 all on its own.
Yeah, the Hawkman's an entire story. What you need to know about Hawkman is he is he's an archaeologist who has the spirit of an ancient Egyptian prince mixed with an alien being. And this spirit keeps... every time he dies, he gets reincarnated. So all the different Hawkmans you've seen over history in continuity have been different Hawkmen just dying and then being resurrected over and over again, which was a thing that Geoff Johns did, which actually made Hawkman make sort of sense, because you'd see him die and come back and various incarnations. An interesting note about Hawkman is he is the only character to show up in every issue of All-Star Comics and every issue of All-Star Squadron, which was the companion book. Roy Thomas made it a point to always have a scene with Hawkman. He was also the longest... the team had a leader. He was the longest-running chairman of the JSA back in the day. The Flash was the original one for a couple issues. Green Lantern was for one issue. And then Hawkman was for about 40 issues.
Is that why Hawkman and Adam are really tightly connected? I mean, whenever you go back, because it doesn't really start in JSA.
It's not until the Silver Age that those two have their team up. The Silver Age Hawkman and Adam.
I have a question about Hawkman, because
I was gonna say, make the sound, Scotty.
It seems like lately,
nerdy nerd.
Hey, we're not getting away from that.
Yeah.
I'm not going any nerdier at this point. It seems like, you know, and not that I've read a ton of DC stuff, but from what I've read, more recent stuff with Hawkman, it's like he's this very sort of warlike character. Was he like that then? Was he always sort of like that?
Yeah.
I get the feeling like...
A lot of the characterization of the characters, that's... Gardner Fox, who we'll talk about after we get all the characters, he wrote a lot of the stories, and characterization isn't one of the strong suits of the Golden Age. A lot of things that one character say, and it's all exposition.
Right.
So a lot of... There's hints to it and stuff like that, but over the years, as better and better writers get a hold of the characters, they each sort of add their own little bit to that. So over time, Hawkman has become much more defined as being sort of, you know...
This real warrior.
Yeah, this real warrior
ass
type, you know.
Okay.
Angry.
I always thought he was kind of... He was just like a dude with wings. I'm like, eh.
Does he actually have wings, or are they strapped to him?
No, he has a belt made out of Inth metal, which is from...
Thanagar.
Yeah, that's the foreign plan. It's anti-gravity, but in order to control this flight, he has a wing harness. He has a harness with wings on it.
Okay.
That allows him to fly around. So those wings are not really attached to him. So,
which is convenient. You know,
you can take them off.
You can take them off. And
another member was our man, Rex Tyler. His ability was he invented Miracle-O pills, which were pills that would give him 1 hour of power.
Nice.
Which wouldn't be super strength, sort of limited invulnerability.
Well, that's like gummy bear juice.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Remember that?
Except did the gummy bears ever develop an addiction to it?
Actually, they might have.
Which is one of my favorite parts of JSA, the golden, is the golden years?
Golden
or golden
age.
Which you made me read, and which I really enjoyed, but they really get into that.
He was only in 4 issues of All-Star Comics.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of these characters, some of these characters are not in a ton of JSA stories. I mean, he's been retconned to be far more a part of it. One of my personal favorites, Johnny Thunder, who was a member for a number of years, was a young man born at 7 a.m. on the 7th day of the 7th month, was kidnapped by bad Hanesian monks and given a magical thunderbolt to conquer the world.
Nice.
He escaped.
I want one.
And it took him several years to figure out how to command the Thunderbolt, which was by saying, "Say you," which was the Thunderbolt's name backwards. And the Thunderbolt would do whatever he asked him to do, but the limitation was he had to tell the Thunderbolt what to do. Yeah, in order
it's like Simon Says.
And a lot of stories revolve around the fact that Johnny Thunder's sort of a fuck-up. he's just a doofus with like a magical lightning bolt that does whatever it tells him to. So a lot
which
of stories
could lead
involved.
To
yeah.
A lot of good stuff.
A lot of stories involved him being sort of a doofus. Another character, Mr. Terrific, who is Terry Sloan. He was a boy genius who accomplished everything he wanted to in his life by his 20s and became suicidal because of the lack of challenges in his life. He saved
someone
who jumped
off
a
bridge
feels. And became a street-level hero trying to stop juvenile delinquency. It was often a... he only appeared in one JSA story and had a lot of solo stories and other titles, but he was only in one and he was only a guest of the other characters. So he sort of has a tangential... relationship to the JSA.
He was a street level superhero. Yeah. Was because he black? Is he a black character?
He is now. Right. At the time, he wasn't. And he wore a coat that said "Fair Play" on it.
He still does, according
to
this guy.
Yeah,
why Fair Play? I've always wondered that.
Because he was smart.
Fair play, man.
Yeah, juvenile delinquents cheat.
Yeah.
Fair play. Fair
it's
play.
Like, don't cheat on that test. I have
just
powers.
Fair play.
Okay. Good man.
Just a mantra. I don't know.
Another one of my favorites is the is Sandman, Wesley Dodds.
Yay, my favorite.
Yeah. He was
Yay.
Sort of a...
Scotty's favorite, too.
He's sort of an adventuring man who just wore a gas mask, a suit, and had a gun that put people to sleep. Mm-hmm. A big character.
Pretty normal.
His books.
Like Mike Norton.
Yeah.
Go to sleep. Go to sleep.
His stories were characterized by the fact that he often got shot in them, in the Golden Age stories. He was getting hurt a lot. A lot. It was also characterized by the
Gotta
fact that he had a sidekick named Sandy Hawkins, mm-hmm. who is still around in the DC Universe, and a female companion, Diane Belmont. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about those stories, even the Golden Age stories, is that Diane Belmont is treated as an equal to Wesley Dodds, not treated as just a damsel in distress that he constantly had to save.
Very nice.
Yeah, he's very progressive.
Huge fan of Sandman Mystery Theater.
Yes, that's an excellent book. About 1940s. Mm-hmm. Sandman.
It's Vertigo's retelling of that character.
I
Fantastic.
Love Notting Hill. The movie.
Yeah, that comes in later. Yeah. Another
we'll
is
we'll
the
get to that.
The Spectre, who is a murdered cop who becomes this, the embodiment of the spirit and vengeance. This character is very interesting because his power level has completely depended upon whatever the story needs him to do for about 60 years. He can either be a rampaging monster that can't be stopped, or he doesn't care about what goes on. So his character is always sort of in flux, and they've sort of handled that by saying that there's the human component, and then there's the actual spirit of vengeance, and the spirit of vengeance doesn't really give a fuck about what happens to... He's not friends with any
well,
of these people.
Well, it depends on who he's hosted by.
Yeah, what's going on. Like, he doesn't give a
he's
shit
detached
about
from,
good or evil.
From anything,
he's about vengeance for people who commit murder. He's not about, you know...
He was created by George Lucas.
He's created by Jerry Siegel.
Like, whatever the story needs at the moment. Yeah.
Who else did Jerry Siegel create?
Super Duper Man.
come on.
Another member was Starman, Ted Knight, who was the defender of Opal City. He was an amateur astronomer and scientist that was inspired by his cousin to become a hero. At the beginning, his story is very interesting because at the beginning he's very much characterized as sort of a borderline coward in a lot of All-Star Squadron stories and things like that. It wasn't until later that he sort of became more confident in being a hero. He's always sort of treated as just a guy who sort of dabbled in being a hero and was always doubtful of it. The Starman series by James Robinson is a really interesting exploration of that character as he is old and has to watch both of his sons take over the role to different degrees. And we'll talk about the Starman run later because I think it's partly responsible for why people even care about the Golden Age anymore. Very easy to have been forgotten. Superman, can't talk about the Golden Age without Superman. He was an honorary member. He also only occasionally appeared, even less than Batman, who showed up in two books. So, I mean, we all know Superman's origin if you read comic books.
You better.
There was the Golden Age Wonder
Turn
Woman.
Turn in
who
your
was,
nerd card.
Who was made of clay.
Wait, what? Say that again?
Golden Age Wonder Woman was made of clay.
The Golden Age Wonder Woman was made of clay?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Hippolyta made her out of clay, and Aphrodite gave it life. And she was immortal as long as she stayed on Paradise Island until a young Air Force lieutenant crashed on the island, Steve Trevor, and then she followed him back. And
much like Pocahontas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her interesting.
Use your translator.
Her weakness was she could be bound by any man. If a man tied her bracelets together, she couldn't break out of it. Which
was
kind of fucked up.
Well, if you read the whole
Wonder
Woman,
she's a whore.
Yeah. The whole Wonder Woman history and who created Wonder Woman?
William Marston. Also
his history.
Interesting cat.
Yeah. His own life and everything was bizarre. Yeah. And there's some issues. There's some Freudian.
She was in a lot of stories, but she was the secretary for most of them, which was sort of ridiculous. Yeah, she
really
probably the most powerful. I mean, we're talking about like 5 foot tall guys and dudes with gas masks and sleeping guns
and judo
like
and judo trained forest.
And then you have like a woman who is created by the gods, but all she gets to do is like take notes at the fucking meetings where they all talk about.
Great.
She also had a magic sphere that could like show what happens in other places. But again, couldn't use it because she had to sit headquarters and
answer the phone.
You know, you need to watch that little. Have you seen that little clip? That reminds me of that one. But they're doing it with Batman. You seen the JLA little animated short? Not to interrupt you, really quick. They all go off the missions, but the whole joke over and over is like Batman has no power, so like, you stay here in case anybody calls. over and over. Similar to that. Like,
I don't think you're going to work on this one.
Wonder Woman actually had she had a lot of solo stories in Sensation Comics, and she had her own series, but she never got taken off the JSA. And she had a great actual Rogues Gallery of characters, the original Cheetah, Angleman, Dr. Psycho, and Giganta. All had Golden Age, you know, equivalents that came back later, but she had a wonderful collection of villains. The last that I'm going to mention is Wildcat, Ted Grant, who is a championship boxer.
One of my favorites.
He's an absolutely fantastic character who was in exactly one JSA issue.
Really?
So yeah, he was only one JSA issue.
What the
shit? Yeah. He had created he was also by Bill had solo Finger. Stories in Sensation Comics. Yeah, created by Bill Finger and Herman Hansen.
Did not know that.
He was just a boxer who took up fighting crime.
He was a champion.
Championship. Former championship
heavyweight
boxer.
Champion.
Dressed up like a cat fighting people.
Why did he dress up as a cat?
Because he was wild.
He was a wild cat. He was a golden age. He didn't need to figure that out.
It's a little femme, right? Cats?
No.
A little femme-y?
He'd punch the shit
would
out of
you call like a jaguar kind of femme?
I don't think
there was a jaguar sitting here. Looking at you like lunch?
Well, it probably, it's a little femme.
So that's sort of, that's sort of basically what people would consider your classic Golden Age JSA characters.
Hi, this is Andy Parks. You are listening to Around Comics.
The stories that told these guys in All-Star Comics, they all had a very similar format in that the characters would start off at the beginning, they would go, whatever the challenge was that they had to go fight, they would all split up and go fight. By themselves, go fight whatever foe it was. And the individual artist that drew those characters would draw those chapters of the book, and then at the end, they'd all come back together to be like, oh, yeah, we finally beat those foes. It wasn't until later and later in the series that instead of breaking up into single people, they would break up into teams of two or three. But that was always the format of these stories. It was always starting off together, breaking up, and then coming back at the end. So you never really saw the whole GSA
go out and
fighting
fight
someone. You'd see them all go out and,
Was that done because of the interesting business relationship between...
I think it was done just realistically as far as different artists would only have to draw their six-page
section. And they were done...
Because the book was... These All-Star Comics were 58-page books.
Okay.
They were much
that
bigger
was my
books,
next question.
And they
it?
Came out like bi-monthly or quarterly. They came out as a much different schedule. Also, during the war, when there was paper shortages, the books came out less frequently. But the whole creative process was way different. You didn't have one artist doing the entire book. You had an artist working on his or his character.
But you know what? If you think logically about it, that would make sense, right?
When you
have your police force, if somebody robs a bank, you don't send the whole department to that bank.
Yeah.
Right? You send a couple guys.
Well, also, the nature of the foes they fought, too, which I'm going to talk about a little bit here. There's sort of, for a team that was around during the war, they never really went and fought Nazis. They never went and fought, the Japanese. Their villains were, they fought spies, saboteurs, gangsters. They had an issue where they raised money for war orphans that Johnny Thunder fucks up royally. A lot of mad scientists, South American Nazi collaborators.
But not Nazis themselves.
I love why they, and I'm sure you're going to get to it, why they didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
explained.
My next thing. It was just a heavy focus on spies, like home front stuff. Instead of going
support of the war, support
stuff.
Of
They also did fight supervillains, but actually supervillains were far less
common.
Yeah, common in those stories, and like a spy story, like fighting a group of spies. They did have their own sort of common supervillains that would show up. Psycho Pirate, which was a villain that can control people's emotions with different masks. You had Solomon Grundy, was an often a foe of theirs. You had King Bee, who trained bees.
it's like a small villain.
The wizard, who was a wizard. You had Perdegaton, who was like a time traveler, who often would manipulate things. You had an Injustice Society, which was sort of their counterpart, which was a collection of their various rogues gallery characters. Vandal Savage, an immortal villain who's lived since the beginning of time, was a JSA foe.
He's Golden Age?
Yep, he's a Golden Age character. The Gambler, who gambled. Sportsmaster, wore different sporting goods.
The Gambler.
Huntress, Fiddler, Icicle, who was sort of an old Captain Cold, Harlequin. These sort of, there's a lot of them, but way more stories involve spies or things like that than they do fighting.
Which was very common at the time. I mean, most superheroes at the time, that's what they fought. I mean, Batman was fighting, you know, gangsters and slumlords and stuff like that.
So
was
Superman. And you have to understand the basis of a lot of my DC knowledge is that Justice League cartoon, and there was actually a Justice League JSA crossover that had that rogues gallery with the sports
guy.
Your
Injustice Society. It would show up a couple times. Why didn't the JSA ever invade Europe to fight World War II? Well, realistically, probably creatively, it's sort of, I think a lot of people can understand how awkward it would be to write a story about Superman going over and ending the war while you're still fighting the war. You know, like, it's not a, people don't want to read that sort of stuff. Because you also have to remember in these 58-page books, you had your stories, but you also had stuff like, here, kids, this is how you should organize your, you know, gather all the medals you can, or all the paper, or, you know, you're patriotic. It was much more focused on home front type stuff. So that's what the JSA dealt with, because it was aimed at kids.
Same kind of thing you're saying, but they didn't want, they almost felt like it was belittling the troops to show, like, oh, look, we got this one guy that can go over there and end the war, and all of our, you know, all the
soldiers,
yeah, all of our 18-year-old soldiers over there, you guys can't do anything.
So they always made it more about, like, the
home front.
Not Marvel, though. They said Captain America running, right?
he was just a super soldier.
I'm kidding. I don't know either one.
But, the reason it came up in the comics, the logic behind it was that the JSA couldn't go to Europe to fight Hitler because Hitler possessed the Spear of Destiny, which was the spear that the Romans stabbed Jesus with.
Yes.
And with this spear, any sort of magic-based or super-powered character that came within Axis-controlled areas would be controlled by Hitler. And there is a story in the All-Star Squadron where they do this, and it's almost a disaster because all of a sudden Superman's being controlled by the Nazis and Green Lantern. Because a lot of the most powerful characters, like the Spectre, are magic-based characters. I mean, that was a trait of the Golden Age, was magic, where the Silver Age was much more focused on science and science fiction. The Golden Age was magical. So that was sort of the reasoning behind why the JSA never went to Europe, was that if they stepped over the certain line, all of a sudden they would become evil.
They would be Nazis.
There's some great All-Star Squadron stories about Hitler bringing Captain Marvel to Earth from his world and controlling Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel fighting the All-Star Squadron. And I'll get to that, though. It's interesting.
There's a lot of stuff you're going to get to, man.
I'm going,
like,
man.
Now we're up to 1944.
It's like a phone book, folks.
Some of it's bad. Well, they weren't around for 10 years. In the 50s, eventually the interest in superheroes died down, so the interest in the JSA died down, and the title became an All-Star Western book instead of an superhero book.
Weird.
And exactly. Boo. It was retconned that the JSA went out of action in the 50s because they didn't want to reveal their identities to the House Un-American Activities Committee. This
named.
Time period, there aren't a lot of original stories about what happens in this time period. There's Darwin Cook's New Frontier sort of hints at this time period and deals with a little bit about the transition from the JSA to the Justice League in the 50s. James Robinson's Golden Age, which is an Elseworlds book, deals with what happens to the JSA when they all quit, you know, what happens to these people. A lot of them have really horrible things happen to them. And while the Golden Age isn't really in continuity, so I'm not going to go too heavily into it, elements of it haven't showed up, like Starman having a mental breakdown after the JSA disband has become part of Starman, because James Robinson wrote the Starman series and included that Ted Knight had a nervous breakdown. So these characters would lay dormant for like 5.5-6 years, no one touching them. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman continued to have their own adventures, but the rest of the JSA were just put to the side. It wasn't until the revival of the superhero book with the arrival of the New Flash, who was a police scientist who, after getting soaked in a shelf full of chemicals that had been hit by lightning, becomes the fastest man alive. It happens all the time. the character of Barry Allen, who became the Flash, was actually a comic book collector who was a fan of
Jay Garrick
Flash.
That's deep, man.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird? And that was what inspired him to become the Flash. It wasn't until... It
wasn't the fact that he could run fast.
No, it wasn't until... Well, he picked the name Flash because he loves the book. I would do the same thing.
Is this still Panhead Flash?
No, this
becomes
red.
Baldy.
This becomes red. Yeah, the red... Baldy Flash.
Barry Allen.
It wasn't until a few years later that that sort of inspiration, that very small idea, sort of became the basis for the whole DC
multiverse
for like 30 years.
Flash fucked it all up.
Yeah.
That's why he died.
Yeah,
in Flash number 123, The Flash of Two Worlds, Barry Allen meets his Golden Age counterpart. It turns out that the Earth that the JSA existed on is separate from the Earth that Barry Allen existed on because they are vibrating at different frequencies. Science,
make
dude.
The sound.
Dude, it's
make
science.
The sound.
Whatever,
Mabel Bower.
You wanted to make it so bad.
You know what? I'm good with it until you start going like Earth, other Earth.
Hey,
what?
You have to figure it out.
If it wasn't for nerds like us,
wow,
you sir wouldn't be working. That's all. Just remember that.
Exactly. Dude, I didn't invent
it. You guys don't buy my books.
I haven't. The writer, and an interesting little twist, the writer of the comics that Barry read, Gardner Fox, who was the real-life author of both this new Flash story and the Golden Age Flash story, he saw these images of the parallel Earth in his dreams and wrote them down.
Whoa.
Yeah. There would be a couple other team-ups between the Flashes, but it wasn't until Flash number 137 that the whole JSA would show up. They were kidnapped by Vandal Savage on Earth 2 and... Barry Allen had to go there and save them. The Earth of the JSA became Earth 2, while Barry Allen's Earth, which was the current Earth that everyone was reading at the time with the Justice League, was Earth 1.
Which seems messed up.
Yeah.
But.
And we have been arguing about Earths ever since.
Yes.
That was my notes. This interesting reveal would lead to the JSA making return appearances in other books as well. Alan Scott, the Golden Age Green Lantern, would show up in Hal Jordan, the Silver Age Green Lantern's book. Al Pratt, the Golden Age Atom, would show up in the Ray Palmer Adams book, and the team as a whole would show up in the Justice League of America book in what would become an annual tradition. These stories, the sort of yearly summer events where the JSA and JLA would team up, would be introductions to other parallel Earths, and were sort of the way a lot of characters that DC bought from other companies would get introduced into the DC universe. So a lot of these stories are sort of the building blocks of what people consider DC history.
Yeah, Fawcett and Charlton. Yeah. And
quick question.
Yeah.
When did the JLA come around? And not the sidetrack, but...
60?
Okay, so JLA is completely Silver Age, then.
JLA is completely Silver Age.
Okay, but even though the characters have their own Golden Age histories, the group itself didn't exist until the 60s.
Yeah, it didn't. It was also written by Gardner Fox, who wrote a lot of the... JSA stories.
Okay.
So that's sort of an interesting thing because he did both of those. Yeah. A lot of people would argue that there isn't a whole lot of character difference between the two of them. But
that's why the team ups were so good.
Yeah. The highlights of the JLA JSA team ups, which were the only time that you really saw the JSA for a number of years, is when they would show up in the JLA. There's stories where villains from Earth switch, and then the JLA and JSA have to switch Earths to go fight, you know, their villains, or they have to fight the other villains. There's the introduction of Earth 3, which is an Earth with an evil Justice League. Characters like Ultraman and Superwoman and Allman. They challenge the JLA to a fight on neutral ground, which is Earth 2. I don't know why Earth 2 got shafted.
Now, is that the Crime Syndicate or the Justice
Crime,
Lords?
That's the Crime Syndicate of America.
Yeah.
You have a story where Earth 1 Johnny Thunder is also a fuck-up, but he's evil.
So he's an evil fuck-up
and fucks everything up even worse than that. Ugh. You have the JLA and JSA fighting Solomon Grundy. You have mysterious black spheres that turn people into supervillains. You see the introduction of, with the sort of creation of Earth 1 and Earth 2, where you had a Golden Age Earth and you had your Silver Age Earth, they start to play around with it a little bit, and you see the introduction of the Golden Age Robin as an adult, as the Earth 2 Robin, who shows up and takes a place in the JSA on the Earth 2. So you have this sort of, they start playing with the skewing of time where certain characters you know, you have aged in One Earth.
And is that sort of like where Superboy and...
Yeah, you have to remember that when these characters were created, they weren't created thinking 30 years from now we're going to make a parallel Earth with other characters named that. You know, like, for Batman, Superman, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, there isn't really a line where you say this is Golden Age and this is Silver Age. People have just sort of picked a point. Because those stories kept going continuously.
Right. But the other characters, you had to sort of figure out a way for it to make sense.
Yeah,
well, and not that the publishers did that.
It fans was have picked
fans
where,
have done it.
Where
yeah.
Silver Age Superman begins and Golden Age Superman's Earth 2, because it wasn't really until Roy Thomas started writing other Earth 2 stories that you really see Golden Age Earth 2 Superman be something different.
Different than...
Because they hadn't planned for any of this. The
right.
thing with the multiverse, it was always sort of... This thing where, like, we bought these characters, let's toss them in. It was never planned.
Right, they're
that.
Just writing stories and figuring
yeah.
out...
They're selling
and
comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
we're a bunch of dicks. Can't you just fucking tell me which Superman lives on which Earth? So it was up to
where's
us.
Where's the chart? I need a fucking chart.
Up to the fucking anal retentive obsessive compulsives like me to determine, this is Silver Age Superman and Golden Age, so you got to remember that.
So in your opinion...
I wonder if this microphone picks up blown minds.
Blown minds. Other events that have happened in these JLA JSA crossovers, we have the introduction of the Red Tornado android. Another one of the stories, Black Canary's husband gets killed, and she moves from the JSA Earth of Earth 2 to Earth 1. You see the reappearance of the Seven Soldiers of Victory, where another set of Golden Age Earth 2 heroes, which included the Earth 2 Green Arrow, Stripesy, Star Spangled Kid, Shiny Knight, all those characters. You had the introduction of the Freedom Fighters, who lived on their own Earth where the Nazis won World War II. You had a story where Sandman's sidekick is revealed to have been turned into a giant sand monster by Sandman.
Sandy?
Yeah, Sandy. Oh. Which is why sand has the power to turn into sand. There you go. You have the introduction of the Shazam characters into the DC Universe.
Family.
The Legion of Superheroes shows up.
Oh, Jesus.
Mr. Terrific is murdered by a possessed Jay Garrick.
Why?
The Spirit King, who's one of Mr. Terrific's villains, takes over Jay Garrick's body and strangles Mr. Terrific.
Oh,
kills
wow.
the original Mr. Terrific.
That had to be... That had to flip, like...
People's minds were...
Fanboys were going crazy.
Wait, is that pre
that's
or dark
shit.
That's during the CCA.
What's this abbreviation stuff, homie?
The comic
code?
Yeah, it was like in the 70s.
Okay, wow, hey, that's pretty heavy stuff for
I thought
CCA.
It was part of the TBO.
The
70s.
Totally awesome
70s
game. Tag. The All-Star Squadron had a giant team up, and they also all got together and battled Darkseid. So, there you go.
Really?
Oh, I knew him.
Yeah, Darkseid.
Yes, we're getting closer.
We're getting closer. The next time you would really see the JSA is as part of the DC explosion of the 70s, where DC put out a ton of books, which all got canceled almost immediately. It was decided to revive the All-Star comic title. These stories would be modern stories of the JSA chronologically after the JLA team-ups that happened up to that point. So it was JSA stories taking place in, you know, the late 70s, as the JSA has gotten old. In addition to what was traditionally considered the JSA team that I listed earlier, they introduced some new members, including Power Girl, who was the Earth 2 Supergirl. It was a cousin to Earth 2 Superman. She was strong-willed and had giant breasts, and often had funny confrontational conflict with Wildcat.
Who wanted to see her giant breasts.
There's the Earth 2 Robin, who had grown up and become an ambassador to South Africa, and then decided to become the Robin, and become... Robin and joined the JSA. And you had Star Spangled Kid, who was one of the Seven Soldiers of Victory who had been lost in time. He comes back, and all of a sudden he's the same age as he was in the 40s, and all of a sudden he's still an 18-year-old, and all of his friends, you know, the JSA are all...
Well, that's one
60s.
Of the things that is kind of interesting about the JSA that we'll see, and I'm sure that it's probably yet to be covered, is that it's one of the few superhero groups or group of comic characters that do age. I mean, they don't age in real time, but they have gotten older.
Yeah, you also had the introduction of the Huntress, which was the Earth 2 Batman's daughter, which was an interesting character. The title would eventually get canceled. It would get moved into Adventure Comics, which became an anthology. within Adventure Comics, they had actually did some really interesting, challenging things. Like they killed Earth 2 Batman, which was sort of a surprise. They had Earth 2 Batman hating the JSA and trying to shut them down. He got manipulated by the Psycho Pirate. And it was interesting. You had Paul Levitz, who's currently the big guy at DC, was a writer of the All-Star Comics revival. As far as artists, you had like Keith Giffen with inks by Wally Wood, who would also pencil two later issues.
Wow.
And also art by Joe Stanton and Bob Layton, who, you know, for people in the know now.
People
in the know.
The hip.
After this got canceled...
the hip.
The hip. Those who are hip.
You know, the hip people that know about Two Earths.
They got, yeah. As that book got canceled,
right. Nerds
the next
cool,
time
dude.
The Earth 2 characters were dealt with were when Roy Thomas came back to DC Comics after 15 years at Marvel. He started up a title called All-Star Squadron, which was... It dealt with the JSA during the World War II era. And a lot of these stories fit in between the original issues of All-Star Comics. Like, these books are, like, continuity nerd dreams because they're like, what?
Because
why
he's
did,
a huge continuity
why
nerd.
Why did Green Lantern stop being chairman after the seventh issue? Well, there's an issue of All-Star Squadron that explains why
well,
that
that's
happened.
Pretty, that's or actually like, pretty cool, though.
The
but
JSA changed her name to the Justice Battalion for two issues. Why did that happen? And he writes a story explaining why that happened.
So Roy Thomas has always been, like, obsessed with continuity and the new show.
I mean, sometimes it explained events, like why Green Lantern quit being chairman or why the JSA couldn't invade Europe. The majority of the stories, though, focused on the lesser-known Golden Age characters that sort of became the All-Star Squadron. Because at one point, the JSA members in an issue of All-Star Comics quit being the JSA to join the army. And this book,
like Elvis.
Yeah, like so they all joined the army. So All-Star Squadron
they
built
were
as
sick,
these second-level characters whose job it was to protect the home front
while the JSA.
Hawkman was busy in
the
army.
Who were some of those characters?
It was a mix of actual Golden Age characters and new characters that Roy Thomas created. There's characters like Amazing Man, who was a black Olympic athlete who gained his powers from the Ultra Humanite, which was a villain that we're now seeing currently. He could absorb the properties of anything he touched. There was Commander Steel, who was a soldier hurt in a sabotage, who got all his limbs and bones replaced with steel and robotics. Cool. Firebrand, who was a woman who fell into a volcano after getting hit with a magical lightning bolt. So naturally she develops fire powers, which always happens. Johnny Quick, who was a photojournalist who gained speed from a special formula that when he recited it to itself, he would have super speed. Liberty Bell, who was she had escaped the Nazis by swimming the English Channel and then came home to find out that she...
was a florist.
No, yeah, she was a florist. That whenever someone would ring the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, she would get a jolt of power.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Me too.
There was the Golden Age Plastic Man, who worked for the FBI. Robot Man, who was a scientist who was shot by crooks and had his brain placed into a recently developed robot.
Is that the same Robot Man that's in...
No, it's the robot
different
one.
Robot Man.
It's different
real
robot.
Name? Bob?
Chuck Grayson.
Chuck
Grayson.
Oh,
yeah. He's cousins with Dick Grayson, if you want to get nerdy. Shining Knight.
We haven't went there yet, but if you want to.
But I appreciate it.
You can get that nerdy. Shining Knight, who is a holdover from, he was like a time-lost member of Sir King Arthur's court. There was the Tarantula, who was writer Jonathan Law, who was a mystery writer, who wanted first-hand experience at crime fighting, so he became a mystery man.
Who to me always looked like a Howard Chaykin character, but I don't know. Because I think he did the Scorpion, was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sorry.
This book became, like, it's if you love old DC stuff like I do, this book is, like, heaven. Because it shows shit like, there was an Earth 2 Aquaman who never had a name or anything. He wasn't the same as the Silver Age Aquaman, but they made a big joke because at the last issue before... all the Earth 2 characters sort of got done away with. Aquaman finally shows up for a meeting, and everyone's like, "Where the fuck have you been?" This whole time, and he's like, "Oh." You'd see characters like Captain Marvel would show up. Captain Triumph, who was like a ghost who could take over his brother's body. The Crimson Avenger, Dr. Alcalt, Dollman, who was just a tiny man. Ghost Patrol.
He's actually in all the meetings.
Ghost Patrol, yeah. Green Arrow, the Golden Age Green Arrow. Guardian Hop Harrigan, who was a pilot. The Human Bomb, who blew shit up. That had to wear a
and he's a freedom fighter.
Yep, he's
right?
a member. A lot of these are freedom fighters. Invisible Hood, who's
now,
a new freedom fighter.
Johnny Quick and Liberty Bell, were they an item?
Yes. Okay. I'll get to that in a second. Mr. America, Neptune Perkins, Quicksilver, who became Max Mercury, who you saw in the new Flash series. The Red Bee, who is also a character who trained bees. TNT and King Dynamite. Bee. Tsunami, Uncle Sam, Vigilantes, Terra, a lot. I mean, this was very much Roy Thomas's pet project that he worked on and, you know, loved.
Nerded out on.
And a lot of these characters do have ties to modern JSA. JSA. Mm-hmm. Johnny Quick and Liberty Bell got married, had a daughter. Jesse Quick, mm-hmm. who is the current Liberty Bell. You know, and that's sort of the theme of the JSA, is all these characters always have ties.
Did they ever explain why she's... Yes, they did explain why she's not Jesse Quick anymore.
Yeah, she gave up her powers to Wally West so he could beat Zoom.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. See, look at me. Yay!
I'm Steve Bryant, and you're listening to Around Comics, and Tom Caters is not wearing any pants.
Well, after All-Star Squadron, sort of concurrently with All-Star Squadron, another book dealing with Earth 2 characters came out, which was Infinity Inc., which was dealt with the children and sort of the predecessors of the JSA. Who all wanted to become part of the JSA, couldn't, got angry, started their own group, like spoiled brats, and then had to fight the JSA.
Brats.
The first 10 issues of that series are really awesome. You can find them like in dollar bins. It's really sort of a fun, very... If you've enjoyed this and you enjoy listening to me talk about this, you will enjoy reading Infinity. yeah, characters, Fury, which is the daughter of Wonder Woman. You had Jade, which is the daughter of Green Lantern. Nuklon, who is the godson of Adam. You had Obsidian, who was Green Lantern's son. You had Silver Scarab, who was Hawkman's son. It was that sort of feel to it. It was all these kids who had grown up with their parents being heroes, and they wanted to be heroes, and their parents don't want them to be. And so they set off on their own. They also did a very interesting thing where in one of their original stories, they came out and told everyone who they got rid of their secret identities almost immediately and didn't hide who they were, which was a very interesting choice very early in the book. This book, also written by Roy Thomas with his wife helping him, Dan Thomas.
Do they still wear costumes?
Yes, they do. Still wore costumes as you had to. A lot of art by Jerry Ordway. Don Newton worked on a little for a while, but it was the last book he worked on before he died, and it was Todd McFarlane's first big book that he worked on. Oh, and I love the Todd McFarlane art so much, man. And he put so many hockey players into it, and like baseball players. I'm kidding, he didn't.
Tony Twist.
We might get sued.
Nothing he can ever do with it.
Another.
Why you gotta make fun of Todd, dude?
Another series at this time. I loved his Infinity Inc. art.
He's a sellout hack.
I just wish he actually did comics.
I don't know.
I wish he would just do comics.
Draw a comic once in a while, we'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
What's the problem? Making too much money?
Another series that came out around that time was America versus the Justice Society, which was a 4-part miniseries. That was sort of a recap of the whole JSA history. Within that book, you get to learn about every single thing they've done. The storyline is Earth 2 Batman dies, and afterwards they find a diary where he accuses them of being Nazi collaborators, so they get put on trial. And during the trial, you see a lot of flashbacks and testimony about their entire history. Turns out it was Batman trying to reveal a plot by Per Degaton, who's a time traveler.
Spoilers!
But it doesn't matter. It's over here, so. But if you want... a really succinct history of the entire team and you want to read it in a book, this book is really interesting, really fun, written by Roy Thomas, art by Raphael Cannon, Mike Hernandez, and Howard Bender, with inks by Alfred Alcala, covers by Jerry Ordway, who always seems to be attached to these things.
Attached to Roy Thomas. Some way.
We met Jerry Ordway. He's married to
Gail Simone. Yeah.
The next big event is
go back and listen to our New York Con wrap-up for that.
Crisis on Infinite Earths, when they decided to get rid of the multiverse, which meant that a lot of Earth 2 characters had to be done away with because they didn't fit in. Like the Earth 2 Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, all those characters had to be... gone away with because they didn't fit into what they wanted to do with continuity. Other characters like the Flash and Green Lantern all of a sudden had their sort of roles changed, where Green Lantern was sort of like the elder statesman of superheroes. He was a lot. He was now like the oldest.
Alan Scott.
Yeah, Alan Scott was now the oldest of the superheroes. Roy Thomas sort of saw the writing on the wall when this came around and said they want to get rid of the Justice Society. So he put forward an idea for a story to get rid of them with dignity. And I'm going to stress that because later we're going to see an example of where it was sort of embarrassing. And it was an idea for an original graphic novel called The Last Days of the JSA. It got cut down from a graphic novel just to a 68-page book that sort of dealt with his way of putting them to the side. And what ends up happening is, after the crisis, the Spectre lies in like a coma state, absorbing power, and all this power begins to stretch out over time, all the way back to 1945, where Hitler uses the power to bring around Ragnarok, the Norse end of the, you know, god cycle, where all the gods die, and to bring it to Earth, to end all of Earth and history, because he's going to lose the war.
Was Guillermo del Toro a big fan of that book? Because it's like Hellboy, the first movie.
Dr. Fate brings the JSA after the crisis to Ragnarok to forestall it long enough to save the Earth. So what ends up happening is the JSA ends up in this limbo-like state forever, and they have to fight this battle over and over again. And during the battle, they die and they get resurrected, and they fight it over and over throughout history. And the goal was they were going to fight this battle forever because they were always forestalling.
So they're shelved, but not dead.
They're not dead, and they're kind of going out like heroes. They're saving the world over and over and over again. Eventually, they at the end of a miniseries called Armageddon Inferno. guess when this came out? Fucking 90s, because it's called Armageddon Inferno. The JSA is replaced with...
Armageddon was good enough.
It had to be the end of the world on fire.
I know.
You know, the end of the world is not too intense.
We need something a little more
Armageddon.
So yeah,
could it be firing? Yeah, sure.
Guess what decade a miniseries called Armageddon Inferno? So the JSA gets removed from that history. We'll deal with that within a second. After the crisis, a couple of other books came out that dealt with the JSA. There was a book called Young All-Stars, which was sort of a continuation. All-Star Squadron after the crisis kind of just died, because I don't think they knew how to tell the same stories anymore without being able to use
Multiverse,
the Earth 2 characters quite the same. So it was kind of an attempt to fix continuity gaps. Secret Origins, which is a book that came out, dealt with a lot of the revised origins for these characters. If you can find those in like dollar bins, a lot of them are really interesting. There was an 8-part miniseries that came out called Justice Society of America, which was the first time there was ever a book called Justice Society of America. You know, so it's volume one. It was written in a style of a Golden Age story where characters all started off on their own and then at the end met up to, team up to fight the big bad guy. That led to an ongoing series, which was only lasted about 10 issues in the early 90s, called Justice Society of America. And it's a very interesting series because it sort of dealt heavily with the JSA coming to terms with, this was after they had returned from Ragnarok, so they're in this world where they are like these living legends, but they're not really the top line heroes anymore. Mm-hmm. And like the first issue, Superman comes in and saves all their asses after the Sandman has a heart attack after they get like attacked by some beast, and all of a sudden they're sitting. These guys who are always heroes all of a sudden have to deal with the fact that they're old, you know, and they have to deal with living like,
middle
in this type
heroes.
Of world. Yeah.
Heart attack inferno.
For me, like, the big highlight was Wildcat and the Atom are two old dudes who, like, start up a gym, but they're still, like, superheroes dealing with, you know, being superheroes and that. The writer for those were Len Straczewski and Mike Paroubek, and Mike McLaughlin were the artists on it. When I had mentioned getting rid of characters with dignity, and I had mentioned Wait for an example of no dignity, I'm now going to mention Zero Hour. It was a mid-90s event where Hal Jordan, the Silver Age Green Lantern, attempts to recreate the universe in such a way to avoid his own eventual downfall. His hometown had been destroyed. He'd killed a bunch of people in his anger. He's assisted by this villain, Extant, which sounds like such a 90s villain's name, And it was an attempt to fix some DC inconsistencies in their continuity. The JSA travels in time to face Extant, where he proceeds to strip them of all the various things that happened through their history that sort of kept them younger, you know, all the little cheats, like getting hit with special time waves, or their time in Ragnarok gave them vitality. So instead of just going out, like, fighting, he turns them all old, and some of them die of old age, like, right in front of him, which is, like, the most undignified way to get rid of your, like, how pretty the original old. Adam died, Al Pratt. That's how Dr. Midnight died. The original
just
Charles
old
McKinney.
Age. Yeah, just finally caught up with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
Go out with a bang.
What a fucking, yeah, nothing like the excitement of dying of old age.
I would have put him in a Suburban and, like Queen Latifah and set it off.
Yeah.
Green Lantern would have created a green Uzi.
It wasn't a very dignified ending for a lot of these characters, and sort of the saving grace for a lot of them was James Robinson's Starman series, which brought a lot of attention back to the Golden Age characters and gave them a very modern slant and a very interesting look at how they related. That led towards a relaunch of the JSA with the literal JSA, the acronym series, which was originally written by James Robinson with David Goyer, and eventually Jeff Johns took over James Robinson's portion Running. Of it. And it was a modern telling of the JSA and dealt with different characters of different generations having to get along, people who took over the roles from others. You had the death of the original Sandman at the very beginning. You had an android Hourman from the future who has to come back and deal with the son of the original Hourman who, you know, feels like his dad abandoned him pretty much. You have the son of Hawkman becomes Dr. Fate, and he has to deal with, this is a character who was born without a soul, was like his you know, he's doomed to be like a horrible...
Hector Hall was doomed
to, you know, born without a soul. You had Black Adam's character really... comes from this, where he's originally an enemy of him, and he joins the Justice Society for a while. He develops his friendship with Adam Smasher, which is still important to this day. You have characters like Jakeem Thunder, like a young kid from Keystone City who accidentally gets the, you know, the Thunderbolt from Johnny Thunder, and you see Johnny Thunder battling with Alzheimer's, and you see all these characters sort of, you see this change and how painful sometimes the change from one character to the other is. That series eventually came to an end probably about a year ago, for them to relaunch as the Justice Society of America Volume 3, which is the book that's coming out right now, which features a lot of the characters previously mentioned. You have The Flash, Jay Garrick, you have Alan Scott Green Lantern, you have Hawkman, you have the son of the original Hourman, who is still Hourman. You have Liberty Bell, the former Jesse Quick. Yeah. You have Obsidian, the son of Green Lantern. You have Sandman, who's Sandy Hawkins, who's now taken over the role of Wesley Dodds as being Sandman. You have Stargirl, who's an interesting character, who is the stepdaughter of the Star-Spangled Kid sidekick Stripesy, who is named after Jeff Johns' sister, who died in a plane crash, and sort of the inspiration for that character. You have Wildcat, still the original Wildcat. You have Mr. Terrific, who I haven't mentioned yet, but I want to mention it because he's a great character. He's also someone with a high natural aptitude for aptitude. His wife and daughter died in a car crash, and he considered committing suicide until the Spectre told him the story of the first Mr. Terrific and inspired him to become a hero. He's been the chairman of the Justice Society for a while, and he has an interesting relationship with Dr. Midnight. Mr. Terrific is an atheist, which is often interesting because he has to deal with the fact that he is in a team with characters like the Spectre, who's a ghost. So how can you be an atheist and still, you know, deal
Believe
with the fact
him.
That you have that? Dr. Midnight, who is the replacement for the one who died, is the son of a woman who was saved by the original Dr. Midnight, who also lost his vision and became inspired to become a superhero. He's very much a doctor first and a superhero second. Whenever you see him, it's usually in a doctor's type role in the DC universe. And that's the book that's coming out currently. You have new characters like Citizen Steel, who is the grandson of the original Commander Steel, who we don't really know anything about. You have characters like Cyclone, who's the granddaughter of Ma Hunkle, who's like sort of the maid, like mother of the mother hen of the JSA. And it's only got about like 5 issues out so far. It's right in the middle of the crossover to JLA, and that's, you know,
where
it's
we're
coming
at now.
Out right now. Yeah, and you're up to date with the JSA.
There you go. So you
yeah.
can start picking that up right now, and you're caught up.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I was going to ask you about, because I kind of got lost in it, is when Crisis came out and they wanted to sort of get rid of the JSA at that
yeah.
time, and you said that they, Roy Thomas had created that story to put them on the shelf but
yeah.
not get rid of them, but then they came back.
Yeah.
What was sort of the story behind that of them leaving that
to be
perpetual?
Honest,
was
I
there
can't
any,
find any? I
any
can't
data.
Find issues of that. I'd never read it. All I know is that they came back at the end of Armageddon Inferno. If anyone out there read Armageddon Inferno,
let us know. Well, okay, but so after Crisis, then they're back, and their role, I mean, not their role, but sort of their place in the history of the DCU is they're all Earth 2 characters still. I mean, that's... Or are they no longer? After Crisis,
they... It depends on the character. A character like the Flash, whether he's from an alternate Earth or this Earth, his history still fits.
Okay.
Because it doesn't conflict anything. Overall, when they took the Earth 2 characters and Earth 1 characters and put them together, a vast majority of it fits perfectly.
And
it's a lot of them weren't duplicates. It's only Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman
that
where
were,
there's confusion because
right.
these characters...
Change so much.
Change
and,
so
yeah.
much when.
And it's not like they just got rid of Earth 2. The way I understand it, and you can correct me
yeah.
if I'm wrong, they kind of got rid of Earth 1 and Earth 2 and all the other. And they merged them
Everything.
Into one Earth that works. So Earth 2 and Earth 1 are really kind of the
well,
same.
Earth 1 didn't have a World War II history. So a lot of the stuff that happened on Earth 2 and World War II, you can fit right into it. It fits
right.
neatly because there isn't anything to contradict it. And stuff like Superman, well, they just kind of started Superman over again. It's a hodgepodge, and a lot of the confusion comes from the fact that editorially, I don't think they knew exactly what they wanted to do, so certain characters like Hawkman all of a sudden changed 2 years later. Like, they didn't change it right away.
It's kind of interesting to me that, you know, it's like, it seems that a lot of the time in their history, they were almost, they've always kind of been sort of second-class citizens
yeah.
in the DCU, and
yeah.
now we finally, you know, it's like Johns, and starting with Robinson, bring
yeah.
you know the JSA book, and they really brought that group to the forefront, and now they're playing a very pivotal role in the DC universe. It's a different role than the JLA, and
yeah.
and they went into that into the new series.
Well,
before
it's a lot
defining
of dealing with like I was talking to John outside about this, about the fact that. A lot of these guys who are, you know, a character like the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, a big theme of his thing is he didn't give a shit about, he didn't know his kids were his kids. He didn't know he had kids. So he pretty much, and when they came and found him, he denied that they were his kids. So he was reluctant to have any responsibility for them. You know, a character like Jay Garrick, the original Flash, can't have kids. So his whole role is that he sort of becomes like the father to everyone because he can't have his own kids. And you see a lot of these characters like Hourman. The original Hourman was a workaholic. It's sort of been revealed. And his son developed a lot of problems because his dad was, you know, like... It's sort of the difference between storytelling. You know, it's not a story you would tell in the 40s, but nowadays it is an interesting story to tell about, like, a workaholic. You know, what if your dad was a superhero and he didn't seem to care about your family and it was tearing your family apart, like, what would happen,
mm-hmm.
you know? Do you
we
become,
see that with,
you replace
with,
him, you know.
With Wildcat and,
yeah.
and in the new series, you know, finding out about his son and
a lot of these guys are heroes, but they also weren't the greatest family.
Right.
You know, to their own families. And a lot of storylines have to deal with them dealing with the fact that they fucked up their own families.
I mean,
this is getting pretty personal for me.
Your dad was Green Lantern?
Yeah.
My dad was Green Lantern. But I mean, I think that's what makes the... When James Robinson started writing the JSA series, the thing that really turned it around was the fact that they dealt with the fact that these guys all have their own relationships. Like, Sandy Hawkins still was beloved of Wesley Dodds, you know, like, they still had a tight relationship. But a character like Rick Tyler, who's now the Hourman, the son of the original Hourman, it resented his father because his father had died, you know. Eventually he gets saved through time travel and whatnot and comes back, but... they have a relationship where they felt abandoned. Like Obsidian, who is the son of Green Lantern, he gets adopted by an abusive father and becomes sort of mentally imbalanced because of that, and blames Green Lantern because he was a superhero. He should have known.
Around,
he should have known that what happened to his son.
Saved the world, but you couldn't save me.
Yeah, you saved the whole universe, but you never
couldn't save
came
the
to help me. Yeah. Never saved the cheerleader.
Yeah.
Well, what would you say? I mean, obviously, you know, like I said, this is a long, long history of comics and characters. If someone was going to sort of, you know, jump into it now, no prior really history of reading this stuff, where would you recommend that they start?
Well, you could start reading the JSA series by James Robinson, and he does a pretty good job of explaining who everyone is, and it's got a lot of action in it, and it's got a lot of intrigue within the stories. So it's not dependent. It becomes a little bit... Robinson depended a little bit more on history.
Mm-hmm.
I think Johns is a little bit better with the action portion of it. But if you're interested in like the Multiple Earth stuff, they have the Trades of the Crisis in Multiple Earths, which collects all the team-ups of the JLA and JSA. And you have your Crisis on Multiple Earths, the team-ups, which collects all the Flash issues and Green Lantern issues and Atom issues. And if you read those, I mean, that's the history of those characters for about 2 decades.
Right.
There is no other history of those characters besides seeing that.
And the All-Star stuff, is that available, like, in archives?
It's available in archives, yeah.
Okay.
At InStockTrades.com.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised by how good, especially the art in the Golden Age stuff, holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Storytelling's, depends. If you're bothered by the Silver Age type stuff, the Golden Age isn't going to do anything for you. But there's like a rougher quality to the art to the Golden Age stuff, which I think makes it sort of age better.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's jumping on points for whatever. You don't have to read
40 years of history.
Yeah. Well, you could probably start with the Robinson JSA and get the Tomorrow's All-Star Companion, and that would. Probably would that catch you up on a lot of that?
Even too much.
Okay.
Don't get the companions are fucking awesome books if you're interested in the JSA. Like the level of detail to tell you what you got in different years if you joined the Junior Justice Society. Like I mean, I love stuff like that. But there's like a wealth of information out there. I mean, I just barely got. You know, into it. I mean, I could have gone on for hours and hours.
Do you think we're going to, you know, we're seeing it this summer with the...
Let's do it. Scotty wants to do more. Okay.
I want
to
do more. About an hour. About an hour.
We're seeing it now with the JSA-JLA crossover this summer, which is kind of bringing back the crossover. Do you think we're going to see this every year or for a few years now?
I wouldn't be surprised. With the people who are writing it now, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, just like listening to this history, a lot of which I didn't know, but then relating it to, you know, the stuff that I've read, the James Robinson and Jeff Johns run, and now the new JSA, it's amazing how much stuff is in, you know, that they keep bringing back and how much history, and we talk about it over and over again, and John's just, you know, is so in love with the Silver Age and Golden Age of these characters, and he brings a lot of that back, but in a way that it's, you know,
it's a
very
lot
accessible.
Of
it's very
convoluted history that they're stitching together in a way that is entertaining and makes somewhat sense.
Yeah, well, I think John's does that as good as anybody. He's trying to fix stuff.
You can get trades of the All-Star, the 70s revival, too. There's 2 trades out of that, too, which is sort of kind of my favorite stuff out of it, like the weird, the Paul Levitz with the Wally Wood inking and Keith Giffen art, which are my personal favorites of doing that.
And I mean, you recommended the JSA Golden Age to me, which I think anybody could. I mean, even if you don't know anything about the JSA,
does not matter. Yeah.
You can pick that up and read it, and it's just a good comic. It's just a good story. It's sort of a postmodern look at the 50s post-war era of the JSA, but it's very good
I'm
stuff.
I'm sure I've completely forgotten stuff, but whatever.
Well, we only have so much time.
Yeah.
I think you got it all.
I think I got it.
Scotty's blowing his mind.
Let me know. Let me know if you hated this. Was this boring? Some people loved it, I bet.
I loved it.
Well, Tom, thank you so much.
I got edumacated.
Yeah, I learned you.
Tom's been geeking out about this for, 2 months now?
I'm going
to
go home and read.
I've had to fucking talk. You're going to read all my notes?
I'm going to read all your notes, absolutely. I'm going to buy the All-Star Companions, and I'm going to start buying quarter books.
I'm going to go home and try to have sex.
You're not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere.
Let's get some pizza.
I just want a pizza.
All right, then. Let us finish the show.
Actually, all right. Pizza.
Are y'all done, Professor Caters?
Give me a pizza, Chris.
I forgot about 20 to 25 minutes of stuff. I'm kidding.
This is a visual show, so you can see my eyes explode.
Are you serious? Yes.
Well, if you like this episode of Around Comics, or Comics 101, and you haven't heard any of our others, one of my personal favorites is the Comics 101 EC Comics that Sal did. I think it's one of the best episodes that we did.
Wow,
we've done. Yeah, it's.
I don't know about all that.
It is one of my favorite episodes. If you want to learn more about EC Comics, the G.I. Joe was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have more. I'm trying to figure out what else we want to do. I was thinking maybe, and I think you had talked about this earlier, is doing a Captain America one with the mm-hmm. whole death of Captain America. Sure. That could be interesting to do a...
Starting with Timely.
And just one
Spawn. Character.
Spawn. Yeah. Spawn!
Tarot.
I'll do the Spawn.
The Lady Death, Comics 101.
No, that's stupid.
I don't think we're going to do that.
Scotty Young, Comics 101.
Men Like Breasts.
There's a lot of stuff we can do, but if you have ideas, if you have stuff that maybe you'd want us to do some research on and do a Comics 101, send us an email at info@aroundcomics.com and we'll look into it.
Absolutely.
Richie Rich. There are a
few ways that you can interact with the show. In addition to sending us emails, you can spread the Around Comics love by taking us up on our Listener LCS Challenge. You can download a flyer at our website.
Let's have a contest right now. I win.
You print it out and
Around
ask
Comics
your
trivia contest.
Ask your local comic shop owner or manager if they will display that in the comic shop. And if they do, we'll mention both you and the shop on the show and provide a link to the shop at our website.
I won't do it.
You can also become our virtual friend at comicspace.com/aroundcomics or at myspace.com/aroundcomics. You can leave us an iTunes music review. Special thanks to Brian Hancock and Doug Rex. Thank you so much, guys.
King
really
Doug.
Appreciate it.
I wish I had a cool name like Doug Rex.
Doug Rex.
King Doug.
So it's always
I'd call myself Dougie Rex.
Dougie Rex.
Yeah.
Like Rex Dougie, yourself.
Yeah.
Dougie Rex.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Make sure to check out all the great things that AroundComics.com has to offer. It's your source for the best in comic book news, reviews, and opinions. I just put up a review of... an older book, Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, number one.
I saw that. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. You can find more great podcasts at comicspodcasts.com.
Just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forum at aroundcomics.com. Someone actually sent me an email today asking where that was. If you're going to the homepage, you just go into the community menu, and there's a forum submenu in there, and once you're on the forum, it's usually at the top. It'll say, like, this week, and then whatever the topic is.
And also, we're working on about our next 6 weeks worth of shows, and I'm going to get the calendar. I'm going to get the calendar updated on the homepage.
Like the family
We've
feud.
Got Jamie McKelvey coming up. We're going to do our episode with the folks at the Savannah College of Art and Design.
Mm-hmm. Mike Mayhew, I think, we're going to talk to. I don't know what else is going on after that.
Yep,
we got a bunch of stuff. A
few others coming up, so always check the forum or the homepage for that. Would like to thank InStockTrades.com again. You can, if we have piqued your interest with all of this great JSA talk, you can follow the adventures of the JSA with InStockTrades.com. From the early Golden Age appearances in All-Star Comics DC Archives to the latest trade paperback collection of today's JSA, InStockTrades.com has what you're looking for. Remember that InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And all orders, $50 and more, ship for free.
We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809.
Remember our Be a Hero contest. You don't know. donate, email us, do something good, and win some cool stuff.
Scotty Young Sketchbook with
Hey,
super.
Do you guys get paid by your sponsors? They give you money?
Our sponsors, not Hero, but our
well, no, not Hero, but money. They pay you money.
Yeah. Borders and Instock Trade.
Because I'm going to sponsor a damn show. I got a lot of
Scotty
cash.
Sponsored by Scotty Young. Scotty Young.
This episode is Scotty Young.
Says, Scotty Young. Yourself,
if you like
man.
Scotty Young, cool. Sponsored by him. That's what it's all going to be.
We'll be happy to do that.
This one's on Scotty.
Yeah.
Well, Scotty, thanks for sitting in with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I think we blew your mind a couple times, or Tom did.
A little bit.
I'm not going to be invited back for dance movie night.
Yeah, no more Stomp the Yard night.
How come I wasn't invited to Stomp the Yard?
I didn't know when you got
back.
What's up? Where you live out? Where you live?
But
Joliet?
For South the night,
I live in Joliet.
You live in DeKalb?
Yeah, you know.
I didn't get invited, but that's because I yelled at Scotty last week.
Oh no,
Dick.
Now, see, here's the thing, right? I say Stomp the Yard night as a joke. People show up at my crib. You know why? Because I'm popular.
Because you're Scotty Young. You roll like that.
He opened the door and he was like, "You're really here?"
Yeah. I was like, "What's going on?" No, really. I sat there with the DVD menu playing for an hour before everybody got there. Break down. That's all it did for an hour. Just repeat.
I slid across the floor on my elbow.
Yeah. Tom did the robot as soon as I opened the door.
Oh, nice.
Well, Tom, extra special thanks to you for taking center stage and walking us through JSA.
Fine work.
Tom's doing the robot. If only everyone could see that.
It was my pleasure, and I never want to do this again.
Oh, come on now.
I will do it again. My voice. Scotty, you got to do the next one.
All right, Jill.
Spawn.
Robots.
Spawn 101 by Scotty Young.
It's very intriguing. That the explanation behind the numbers will blow your mind alone.
You mean the numbers that they just forgot about at one point? Just like
there are 10 Earths in Spawn.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
10.2.
Which,
it's 11.
How far before we start talking about all the people that wanted to sue Todd McFarlane for stealing their ideas and not paying them?
Hey, man. Sometimes, you know, if there's a piece of steak on the table, whoever gets it first,
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Who really owns an idea?
Yeah. I mean, ideas, it's a frame of mind, really. Somebody's name, what is that? I don't, Tony Twist? I'm Tony Twist now. I'm taking his name. And I'm going to take his history, right? I was a hockey player.
Scott, he just wants to be known as the Twister.
We retconned it in.
All right, Sal.
I'm Tom Cater.
Always fun, buddy. All right, I hope everyone enjoyed this Comics 101. Have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode of Around Comics. In the meantime...
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
And around comics.
Golden Age podcasting. Earth 2 podcasting.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved. Love your baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, let me, baby, love you one more time. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need help. God damn it!
One more time.
We
are and they're
mark.
So proud.
Damn it.
We are really, really proud.
They threw me off.
To be goddamn supporters.
I never read this.